Hello, I'm Jack.
And I'm Martin.
And we are The Washboard Resonators. Welcome to our podcast, The Washboard Resonators Present. Conversations from behind the red curtain on vintage music and stories from the entertainment industry.
So here we are for another episode of the Washboard Resonators Presents. And this week, we're going to talk to Ian McWee from Diamond Bottlenecks.
And why have you chosen Ian, Martin?
Well, I think basically, if you play kind of slide guitar, Ian basically makes the best product in the world for what kind it is. And he's based in Britain. He's a thoroughly lovely fella. Is an expert at these things. So if you're watching this podcast on YouTube, you'll see now that I'm holding up lots of his products that I've got. I'm actually really interested to find out more about him as a person, but also to find out how he makes these things and all the famous people that use them. I think it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, sounds great. Let's get into it.
Hello, Ian.
And hello, Martin. Hello, Jack.
Joining us. So we've got sort of two things here, which I'm really interested to find out. I mean, we want to find out about you and your way into music and also making, I would say, the world's best glass bottleneck slides.
Thank you very much.
If I may be so bold. And how one runs that business and how one has developed these products and how one kind of sees the quality. So let's start at the very, very beginning. So where were you born, Ian McWee, and in what year?
Okay, well, I'm a very old person. I was born in Birmingham in 1956.
Okay. And so what kind of, were you always interested in music? Like, when did that kind of start to burgeon, as it were?
That started in, my mum and dad were never really into music. Mum bought, back in the early to late mid-60s, my mum used to buy Beatles singles, all the Beatles singles.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
So there was always music playing around the house.
Mm-hmm.
I got into it when I went to secondary school.
Right.
Basically, you either played football and sports or you got a guitar.
Yeah.
Or a drum. Sorry, Jack. Or a drum.
Thank you.
So are we talking sort of like late 1960s, early 1970s?
We're talking around about 67, 68, around that area.
So there's a big blues rock thing was at the time with bands like Cream and Hendrix. So is it that?
It was that.
Yeah.
More and more music was being obviously on with Radio 1 and, mm-hmm. and other radio stations playing more and more rock, and you could hear it a lot of places, and
mm-hmm.
specifically going into the cafe, the local cafes and mm-hmm. places like that for a coffee or 10. And they'd all be like Rolling Stones or the Beatles or that sort of music on the jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day then, there was, I mean, it tended to be, it's certainly in the UK or in the Midlands, where I was born and based. A lot of people, when they picked up the guitar, either tended to go more towards the soul and reggae or heavy rock, Black Sabbath, mm-hmm. Deep Purple, bands like that.
I guess they were two of the most popular kind of genres in Birmingham. I mean, Birmingham's got a big scene. It used to have a big reggae scene, didn't it?
Oh, without a doubt, yeah. I'll say it was Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, heavy rock stuff like that. I wouldn't say like a hardcore, but a certain group of us started to get into American Southern rock.
Cool.
Which was really my thing.
Artists like?
Leonard Skinner, 38 Special. Holly Hatchet, those type of bands, okay. Southern boogie rock bands, ZZ Top,
and then like the Allman Brothers. Would that be
that's
the slide stuff.
That's the slide stuff.
The genius slide stuff, isn't it?
Yep. As soon as I heard Live at Fillmore East,
yes.
Oh boy, that was like Hallelujah. That was
right.
That to me was my Hallelujah moment.
Really.
And so. I thought, well, I'll go and get myself a slide, and mainly with Dwayne Allman being a glass slide player using his tour receiving pill bottle slides. I went into local music shops in Birmingham, bought any piece of Pyrex tubing I could, but of course that was on electric.
Yeah.
So for a couple of years, I was playing slide on electric. Okay, nowhere near the Dwayne Allman.
No, I mean, well, never. Almost nobody's ever got anywhere near since, have they? You know, but apart from maybe Derek Trucks or whatever. I think
Dwayne Allman took it to another level. And although these guys are Derek Trucks and Sonny Landreth and the ones I call the young guns, Joey Landreth and Ariel Posen.
Yes,
you've heard of those guys.
Geniuses.
They're like the new wave that are coming in. But to me, even now, all these years on, as soon as I hear Dwayne Allman, it's like, oh, come on, nobody can get near that.
No, they can't. And that stuff, we're going off a bit off track here, but that stuff he does at the end of Layla, is off the chain, isn't it?
Without a doubt.
Crazy. If anybody's wondering who we're talking about, I mean, this guy had this very famous band, two drummers going around, amazing. And then the thing we've all heard a million times is that piano outro on Layla where he's doing that really high slide step, and it's unbelievable. So just to sort of keep on track, so we could talk about lots of things forever. What about, so you said you're playing electric and you're playing slide and you're into the kind of the Allman Brothers and that kind of stuff. So at what point are we now? Are we 14, 15, 16? What year? What kind of guitar are you playing at this point? Are you playing in bands?
Well, at the time I got a cheap Japanese Gibson SG.
Cool.
But my moving point was, I'd listened to all the electric stuff, but I never knew that Dwayne Allman was a session player.
Yeah.
And then they bought the album out called Dwayne Allman, an Anthology Volume 1.
Yeah.
There's two tracks on there. One is called Please Be With Me by a small band called Cowboy. And then the second track following that on the vinyl was Mean Old World, which was a Dobro duo, Dobro and National Resonator, with Dwayne Allman and Eric Clapton.
Yes.
That, for me, was the point I thought, you know what? I want to do that.
Isn't that interesting? You know, I don't think I've ever heard any, I've heard countless hundreds of times over the years talking to people that people find their way into, like, you know, roots music through, you know, you listen to the Beatles and then that goes back to rock and roll, and then you kind of, or Hendrix or Led Zeppelin, then you go back to Memphis Minnie or Robert Johnson, and then you kind of, you know, then you find Charlie Patton eventually or whatever. But
yeah,
I don't think I've ever heard anybody say, well, I started with Dwayne Allman, basically, and then worked back and found him and Clapton doing the duet thing with it. You know, that's really interesting. But you're probably arriving at the same place that we all do. So you're arriving at resonators and bottlenecks.
That's right. As soon as I heard those two tracks together with Dwayne Allman on his national, it was like, what is that sound?
Yeah.
And where do I get it from?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. We can see where this is heading now, can't we? This is great. Yeah. So if we're in the early 70s, are you playing in bands and are you kind of having those kind of experiences?
No, basically it's just a bunch of us school friends in each other's living rooms, just jamming away together, putting songs together.
Were you having lessons, or was it self-taught?
All self-taught. It was all self-taught.
And then were your bandmates, recalling, or jamming friends, were they also interested in slide stuff, or were you the kind of black horse in that group?
I think out of about five of us, it was just me and one other guy who was into the slide stuff. They veered off into Pink Floyd and various bands, but we just basically stayed with the Southern Rock, the American boogie Southern Rock, as I said, ZZ Top, Allman Brothers.
This might be a bit of a random question, but so had you heard like lap steel guitar before this?
Didn't
know if you'd been drawn to that before, but no, it's like just a new sound. So maybe if you heard a lap steel first, you might have got into that.
Exactly, that's right.
And the world would be a different place, although you do some very nice laps. Okay, so as we move forward then, so like let's as we like look at sort of your life before we get to the business stuff. So what So as we move through the 70s, what happens then? Do you ever at any point start gigging or playing out, or is it always just kind of like a hobby thing? And do you go to college or university? Do you study? Do you what jobs do you take? I know you didn't always run a slide business, did you?
So what
happens as we move through the life there then?
Well, when I left school, I did a small a year's apprenticeship in the jewellery quarter in Hockley.
Right. Okay.
As a jeweller. Really didn't take to that, basically because the at the time in the 70s, the jewellery workshops in and around Hockley in Birmingham, they were like damp caves. And I had so many bouts of flu and thing. And
really?
Oh, yes. It was, yeah.
It sounds like a Charles Dickens novel now, is this?
Charles Dickens was probably better circumstances, to be honest.
You're getting consumption in all these mouldy rooms or whatever.
I've got images of like goblins and
used to go in at 8 o'clock in the morning, and there used to be overalls tucked over paraffin heaters with steam coming off them.
Wow.
To get the water out, which had actually impregnated the overalls during the night because it was bad.
Wow. Goodness me. So these are really disgusting conditions. So you don't take to jewellery making by the sound of it?
No. And from then on, I went into the motor trade.
Cool. In what way?
Not so much hands-on onto vehicles. It was more like selling car parts and buying parts in for work in the garages and the accidents, mainly accident damaged vehicles.
Right.
Which I did that for, a good... from about, say, 70, well, that was from 74.
Yeah.
Till my daughter was born in 1995.
Oh, right, okay. So you're working in the motor trade, you're dealing in car parts and all that kind of stuff. So it's almost like nowadays in Britain, you have like Andrew Page's kind of places where they do parts and stuff. So you move on, and then your daughter's born in 95. And again, just because I'm really, I don't know this about you. So while this is going on, all through these times, at any point, are you playing gigs, or do you have guitars at home? Are you joining bands? Are you going to see bands a lot? Like
I did join a band which did rock covers for about 4 or 5 years.
Cool.
But again, it was just basically to whet my appetite. I'd always wanted to play in a band, and these guys hooked up with me and said, "Do you fancy coming and doing some gigs?" And it's about 3 or 4 years. The time, I was starting to back in the early 90s, really starting to get into making guitar slides.
Here we go then. Okay, boom. Yeah. So we get to the 90s, your daughter's born, and then, so you say you got into making slides. So literally, like just from the very beginning, what was the formative thing? What happened? Was it that you couldn't get what you wanted, or people were asking around?
Exactly, that's exactly right. What it was. Because going back to... listening to these two tracks, these Orman on the Duane Orman anthology.
Yeah.
I sold all my electric gear. The 1970s Dobro, Nick chrome plated Dobro. Mm-hmm. And I knew at the time that Duane Orman used a glass slide.
Right.
So I thought incorrectly that he also used the same type of glass slide on his Dobro. That was wrong. He used a metal tube. But I got my Dobro. And I was going into the guitar shops in Birmingham and saying, right, I'd like a glass slide. There you go, sir. That'd be £5. It was Pyrex.
Yeah.
I'd get home and think, well, that's not what I'm hearing. That's not working.
What do you mean by Pyrex?
It's like a very cheap glass. It's very lightweight. That one.
So just for people that are listening to this on the podcast platform but not seeing it on YouTube, I've just held up a Pyrex slide. I guess we'll talk about this maybe in more detail later, but Pyrex is this kind of very light, quite, if you dropped it, you wouldn't necessarily break it so easily. It's the kind of thing you see in test tubes, or you see when you have like, you know, glass bowls that you cook with in the oven.
This stuff that
takes heat very well. It's quite cheap to produce, I believe, easy to produce. So anyway, what I'm saying, I held up a Pyrex tube for the YouTube.
Let's just say this: you may have bought that for £5. It probably cost about 30p to produce.
Yeah.
And yeah. was that the only thing that was kind of available? Was it in
that's all there was back in the '70s? That's all you got. Either a Pyrex tube, which is, the technical term is borosilicate glass, because Pyrex
I knew what that was. You said that
Pyrex is the trade name.
We'll text you at the end. Steel, on that
that's
one,
all you got.
I guess the reason why you got this home and it didn't sound the same as, say, Duane Allman is because if you play these kind of light, very lightweight glass slides on, say, an electric guitar with very thin strings and an overdriven amplifier,
yeah,
it works perfectly well. But if you then play this on an acoustic instrument with really thick strings, literally, yeah, it's so light, the vibration of the string bounces the slide off in a very micro level and you don't get the depth or the sustain,
no,
do you?
No.
So you went home and you were like, this doesn't sound right. So yeah. What's the next step?
Next step was I visited one of the guitar shops in Birmingham, the Discory, and they got a lovely big section of blues albums.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking on these albums and I turn one over. I remember it was Furry Lewis.
Yes.
There's a picture
yes.
on the back of him playing with a bottleneck.
Yeah, yeah.
Broken. Yeah. I thought, well, that sounds good. So again, I went back into the guitar shops and said, I actually bought the album. I bought the album to show people. I took it into Birmingham and I said, I want one of those. And they laughed at me and said, oh, I've got this Pyrex tube. I don't want a Pyrex tube. I want one of those.
So this is the mid-90s and you're walking around shops with an album tucked under your sort of look, guys, just give me one of these from the picture.
This is around the late 70s.
So we're back in the late 70s. Okay,
in the late 70s, this is.
So all through the 80s and 90s, you're trying to figure out these better sounding kind of things. And then, so the mid-90s then. So back to the mid-90s. So mid-90s, you still can't get what you want.
Well, now, what happened was I bought a thing. It's a bit of a skeleton rig, which you put a glass cutter in, called a bottle chopper. You put it in the neck of the bottle. The glass cutter goes on the bottom of the neck, you spin it round, make a score mark, and knock it off. So I did three or four of those, and I thought, and that was the sound on the Dobro. That was the sound. I've got it. I've nailed it.
Sorry. So is this something you've made or you've bought this?
I made myself. I had to make myself. Nobody else did them. I mean, this is pre-internet days back in the late 70s.
That's what I figured. 80s. I guess there's not the demand there at the moment.
No, not at all.
But you wanted it yourself. Cool.
That's it. So fast forward to the early 90s, and I'm playing gigs with this rock covers band, and I'm using my bottleneck. And people will come up to the stage at the end of the night and saying, where did you get that bottleneck from? And I'm saying, well, I made it. Because you can't buy them, I made them. Oh, wow. Can you make me one? So I ended up going around to gigs with a tin box with about a half a dozen handmade bottlenecks on.
Amazing.
In this box and selling them for a fiver at the gigs.
Should have made them six quid, more than the Pyrex.
Yeah, that's it.
That's amazing.
Making more money at the bottlenecks and the gigs.
That's probably a very familiar tale for lots of musicians listening to this. Yeah, it's the merchandise. Yeah, so you, this is amazing. So, is your wine consumption going up? Are you trying different bottle types now? Are you experimenting with different glass colours and all this kind of stuff? Or are you not even at that point yet? You're just knocking these bottles off and just flogging them.
Well, the bottles in the 90s up to around about the early 2000s are perfect. What you find in these days is a lot of wines are going into screw top bottles.
Yes.
Screw top bottles for guitar slides don't work.
No.
They're the wrong shape, they're the wrong glass. So anybody who wants to try it themselves, don't even go anywhere near a screw top bottle. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But the Italian Chianti bottles, the long neck Merlot bottles are perfect. Those work every time. And we've got a little bit of a circle, a collection of three or four local restaurants, who hold on to the bottles for me.
We're
going to pick up that once a month.
Let's talk. We'll get to that later on. I think that we'll get to that later on. So let's now sort of recap and then sort of move forward. So you just to recap, you have started selling some chopped down literally bottlenecks out of a tin, because people have been asking you for them, saying yours sounds really nice.
That's right.
And so you're going around gigs, you're literally selling these things to people. So how does it then become a business? How does one make that move? What happened?
The move happened at the Gloucester Blues Festival in 1993,
where
I met a guy named Richard Atherton, and another guy named Bob Brosman.
Ah, yes, of course.
Now, Richard Atherton at the time, in fact, I'd never met him before, and I was showing Bob Brosman this bottleneck, and he said, "That's really good." Standing next to me was a guy named Richard Atherton from Malvern, who said, "I need to speak to you." I said, "Okay, well, where are we going here?" I'm just about to open a shop and become the UK's first national resophonic dealer. He says, "I'll be importing the guitars from California. If you can supply me the bottlenecks, we've got a business."
Wow.
That's what kicked it off.
So you've kind of made a bit of a name for yourself by this regard, because they wouldn't have approached you otherwise. Were you playing at this festival, or were you just a punter?
No. Literally just a visitor. Pop down to Gloucester, and I say, it really is like a thousand to one chance that the guy standing next to me, while I'm showing this bottleneck to Brosman, was the guy who was about to open this shop selling national guitars.
Yeah, so it's just, that's just real. So it's a real kind of luck kind of situation, that.
Because, without a doubt.
Yeah, and so, I mean, Bob Brosman is somebody that, you know, we don't really want to talk about.
No, we don't, for
lots of obvious reasons, but he... sort of, there's a video on YouTube where he's explaining about his slide, and he chopped off a bottle and a rose bottle, and he used it all his career, from what I understand. One didn't break it and stuff, so that gig, he must have been using his whatever it was at that time, 40 year old slide or whatever. Yeah. And probably 30 year old slide, and you must have just been chatting to him saying, "Oh, you've got one of those, look, I do these kind of things."
That's all it was.
And at the time, there's nobody better in the world to explain the mechanics of resonator playing, acoustic playing, or bottleneck, the technicalities of bottleneck playing. So that's just a very lucky thing, isn't it?
Total lucky coincidence that all three people were there. Yeah. So I literally just took it down there to show him and say, "What do you think?
What do you think? Did he? I mean, I think that's all right. Did he try it or not?"
Well, we all know what he was like. He's a bit awkward. Yeah. He did try it, and he said, "Yeah." He says, "You've nailed it. That's it."
Okay, great. So the next stage then is that Richard from what was the name of that shop? I can't remember now.
But the guy was Richard Atherton. The shop was actually originally called National in the UK.
That was that's what I've heard it called. But then did it change
the
name?
Back to the time in Worcester.
Yeah, and in Worcester, so which is near to you in the Midlands and stuff, or fairly near. So
yes, just one junction down the M5.
Yeah. So what happens next then? So this Richard chap, he says, "Right, let's. I want to stock your product."
Then that's exactly what
you're working in the motor trade, going around looking for bottles. So what happens next then?
Well, by that time, I'd actually, as chance would have it, was made redundant the week my daughter was born.
Oh, my goodness.
So, that wasn't a problem because we already talked about the fact that I was going to be a house husband.
Right, that being decided, had it.
And stop at home and bring my daughter up. But, of course, the thing is, because of that, I'm thinking now, what am I going to do with the spare time? And that's what really kicked off.
So it's just all everything's aligning.
It's all aligning, all the ducks are in a row, as they say in America.
That's a good one. So what happens next then? So how, like, what's the next stage then? How does this become a business now? Do you set up in your garage? Do you get workshops? Do you just knock them off the kitchen table? What happens?
Well, at the time, I was making them in my garage. The garden shed at home. Just using the stuff I'd used all over the previous years, cutting them off and selling them at gigs.
Right.
Because Slide and Pickett really took off, instead of like supplying Richard with, say, about a half a dozen a month, he wanted half a dozen a week. And I'm thinking, I can't do this in a garden shed in January.
Wow. Sorry, and what's Slide and Pickett?
Slide and Pickett, National in the UK became Slide and Pickett. They changed the name.
Right.
So it's National in the UK up until 95, and 95 to 97, when they unfortunately closed. It was called Slide and Pickett. So the same shop had two names. And so literally living within a mile of the Stourbridge Glass Quarter, I thought, well, if I take this down and see if somebody can actually do these quicker than I can in my garden shed. And as chance would have it, I went down to the place where people were saying, oh, you need to go and see these guys. They're the ones. And I met Richard Lamming and Brett Taylor, who ran Red House Glasscrafts. And I gave Brett half a dozen bottles, and he said, come back in half an hour. I think, it takes me an hour and a half to do one. Went back in half an hour, and they were absolutely perfect. And I thought,
amazing. Great. That's fantastic.
That went on for about 18 months, taking bottles in, and then I'd take them up to Slide and Picket, or by then I'd finished with the bands, obviously being a full-time house husband. And then I went into the shop one day, and Brett said, look, why don't I show you what to do, and then you can come in and do them yourself? And I thought, that's an awfully good idea.
Can I backtrack a little bit? By this time, had you already experimented with different types of bottles? Now you're saying some sound better than others, or were you always using the same type, or hadn't looked at it yet, or
just whatever we could get hold of?
Right,
whatever we could get hold of, we were just using them. Clear, green, blue. If I could get them, I'd make slides out of them, bottlenecks out of them.
And were you paying? Is it Brett? Did he say to do this? Was he taking a cut?
That's right. Yeah. So a few quid for a bottle, and I say taking them to Nashville in the UK, Slide and Picket. And then they'd go on display and be sold from the shop.
Amazing.
But the quantities that they wanted after a couple of years was crazy. And
I mean, it's amazing that they were selling, like you said, they went to, you know, from a, you know, say six a month to six a week, and it sounds like it was growing. So I mean, it's sort of astonishing to think that even there was a market that big, or there is a market that big. It's sort of, you know, when you think about some of the people that we know and stuff, or you think about some of the Facebook groups, you see the same 15 faces going round.
Yeah.
But out there in the real world, there's so many people at home with these, you know, that are into this stuff, isn't there? And it's and you must have seen that there's a market here, perhaps. This is bigger. This is bigger than maybe I thought it was.
Oh, without a doubt, because when Nashville in the UK, as they were known originally, they just started doing mail order flyers. Obviously, they advertised in the guitar magazines.
I remember them in Guitarist, and when I started getting interested in resonators, I remember seeing their adverts for like Slide and Picket and all these resonator guitars and bottlenecks, which would have been your bottlenecks now. I was a bass player at the time, but you know, like, yeah, I remember them just about.
Yeah. Of course, they sent the catalogues out and the flyers out, and people were going, a bottleneck? Ooh, I can buy one. Save having to try and make one out of a dozen bottles.
Yeah, or going to the guitar shop and buying one of these Pyrex things that sounds like on an acoustic guitar can sound not very good.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, what people have to understand is, certainly slide players, when you're talking slides on guitars, electric guitars and acoustic resonator guitars are two completely different instruments when you're talking slides.
Absolutely, yeah. And I can attest to that, having visited your shop, which we'll talk about later on, like how good that first meeting was and how much it helped me. But we'll talk about it in a sec. So yeah. so as we go through the mid-90s, so let's just keep sort of thinking now. So you've gone from the shed, then you've gone to...
I've gone from the shed to literally going into the workshop myself.
Now you're doing it yourself. So what... At what point then does it expand, or do you start? I mean, at this point, are you just dealing with Richard, or are you now taking out adverts? Have you now come up with a business name? Are you going to guitar shows or anything? You know, the '90s, 2000s.
None of that time. At that time, we were just basically making the bottlenecks, and I was taking them, not actually showing them at guitar shows, but meeting musicians at guitar shows. Mm-hmm. And the one pivotal meeting was Kevin Brown,
right? Yeah,
based down in the West Country, and I met him at the Sheehan's Guitar Show in Leicester. And this is back in about 2001, 2002, and I showed him, and he played this bottleneck, one of my normal sliced off a bottleneck, and he said, "Have you ever thought of doing anything else in glass?" What like? So, well, something like hand blown glass. And that was like a light bulb moment. So I went back to the workshop and said to Brett, can we make these out of hand-blown glass? He says, yeah.
Wow.
Of course you can.
So who is Kevin Brown?
Kevin Brown's a slide guitar. He's an excellent musician, slide guitarist. He's based down in just outside Bath. KevinBrownMusic.com, if anyone wants to Google him up. Fantastic player, great touch on a slide guitar,
right?
Great songwriter. And I say it was literally Kevin that said, have you ever thought of doing the hand blown stuff?
Amazing. And you're right by that glass center, aren't you? So it's again things aligning really.
So your business kind of expands now because there's sort of like two lines, like there are sort of two lines now, aren't there? There are again for the YouTube, I'm holding up like I've got some of yours that are chopped off of.
That's chopped off the bottles.
Bottles here, and then we've got some of these hand blown ones where you get. And I've been at your place when the tubes arrive. These really long tubes arrive.
Yeah.
And then what's really great is you can sort of find which part of the tube because they kind of not, you know, they're different, right. Different parts are different kind of thicknesses, whatever. You can chop bits out, people. You can sort of custom do stuff. So you get these two kind of lines of things now. What's the first time you get one of these hand blown bits and you try it on a guitar, maybe yourself or your pals come and try it out, and you go, oh goodness me, this sounds bigger than a glass. You know, is there like a light bulb eureka moment where you try that hand blown for the first time and go, oh my goodness,
this is massive. Really, the first one we actually got a couple of tubes into test and sent some to Kevin and a couple of the guys, basically acoustic and resonate just like players.
Uh-huh.
And we just got the feedback to say, we don't know what you've got here, but whatever it is, it's working.
Oh, that's brilliant. So, yeah. There's probably, I mean, this, is it fair to say perhaps that had there ever been any hand-blown kind of slides made prior to that?
No.
Like, no, so where are we now? In the early 2000s or the late
2000s?
Early 2000s, and for the first time ever, this very, you know, heavyweight, very, very beautifully made crystal glass, which is the kind of glass that it is, lead crystal glass. Somebody gets to put these on a resonator guitar, and it's like, just for anybody that's listening to this that maybe doesn't understand, like, often when you play resonator guitars with like cheaper slides, you play the guitar open so you're not fretting anything, and it sounds massive. Then as you use the slide on the strings, it usually, especially with Pyrex, the notes are just considerably quieter and don't sustain. Yeah. When you use one of your amazing crystal glass ones, these lead crystal heavy ones, everything's even. It's the volume you get from an open string you get when you're using the slide. It sounds and then different glass colors sound different, like you get different frequency responses. Some are really bassy and fat, and some are, you know, very clear and middly and stuff. So like somebody at some point is the first person to try this and goes, oof, this is spectacular, this is massive.
That's right.
You must have been really happy about that, really excited. I don't know, like did fires spread around the resonator world? Oh my goodness, Ian in Starbridge has got these magic.
Yeah, it did. We sent a few down to the acoustic centre in Wapping in London.
Yes.
And two or three of the guys there tried them. And, of course, again, this is going to early 2000. By then, the acoustic centre had actually taken on the whole of the National Resophonic dealership.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of like being a slide at National in the UK with about a half a dozen, they got like a wall of 30. And that was the place where your resonator players went, and God bless them, they said, right, if you want one of those, you need to try one of these.
Yes.
And of course they'd got a big selection, and it literally, and by that time around about the early 2001, 2002, we'd actually got our first website up, and that's when the World Wide Web started to take notice.
Yeah, that was very early days. So there's kind of probably like a prairie fire thing here. So there's word of mouth, people that are searching out resonators, are trying a piece of your glass and going, my goodness, I've never heard a resonator sound so good. And so at this point now, early 2000, you've got a website. So is it a case now that, you know, orders are coming from all over the world? And how many are you selling a week? You know, like what's a rough idea at this point?
At the early days, you're going out around about three or four off the internet, because again, on with the website, it's early days, and at that time there was no Facebook, there was no social media, so it was like somebody going onto the early Google and going, okay, glass guitar slides, what have we got?
Yeah, and they find you.
And because if they went on, if somebody typed in a certain keyword, say custom guitar slides or heavy glass guitar slides, we would always pop up on the top of page one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really started the ball rolling then.
I wanted to ask a scientific question. So what have you found out now, or what do you know about the different thicknesses and color of slides? Does something relate to a better sound?
Well, with the lead crystal, the difference in sound is really governed by the wall thickness. The heavier the slide, the thicker the slide, the warmer, there you go. The heavier slides, the thicker wall slides, which have got more weight, give a more rounder, fuller, warmer tone. The thinner ones still work better than any Pyrex piece you can buy. But that's mainly the colours of the hand blown slides doesn't really change much of the tone. It's really in the wall thickness.
And so did you experiment with them? There must be a limit to how thick it can get before it doesn't sound good anymore.
We never tried. I must admit, we've got a piece in our shop now which is about a half inch thick.
Wow.
Next time you're down our way, you'll have to try it out.
We'll try that one. It becomes like a practical point, doesn't it? Like, I've got, again, just we can see it on, if it's on the YouTube, this, but I've got the one of your sort of thinner lead crystal ones that I'm holding up now, then one of the thicker green ones. Now, I love the sound of the green one, but what you find is as it gets so thick, as you're fretting and then just moving your hand around to fret chords without using a slide, you do start to rattle on the sides of the frets a little bit. Like, as it gets thicker, you've got to be very, your technique's got to be a lot better perhaps than one of the thinner ones, but the sound is incredible. So it's just, you know, I guess if anybody's listening to this that's maybe looking at getting one of your slides, it's just, you know, it's something you can learn. Yeah, so the hand-blown ones, this is something you told me on the phone, which might be a nice thing just, again, to share for people that might be listening to this. So the way that you was telling me, the way that you tell which one's which is, if I, again, I'm, for the YouTube people, I'm holding up one of the glass bottlenecks now that was literally a bottle, you'll see that it's green all the way through because it's got that...
oxides.
Iron oxide in that, isn't it? Which so that's literally oxide that's gone green because because it rusts basically. And then one of the hand blown ones is completely transparent. So they're completely transparent tubed, and the way you get the colour in this case, it's that beautiful like green kind of striated kind of thing. That's on the inside, isn't it? So that's applied as a finish on the inside of the tube, and then when you see it, it looks it's all green. But actually, if you look, face on, it's
a clear
transparent. It's funny, isn't it, Jack? Because Jack's asking about the sound difference of these. I know Jack's sort of for a washboard player and a drummer, he's kind of interested in this. When we came to you that first time, and I was searching for you, I was searching for your product, but I didn't necessarily know it was you but we were coming down to Sowerbridge to play, and I was like, I booked in with you. I remember that first time taking my tricone into your workshop and you just getting different lengths of your kind of hand blowns out. And I sent Jack on the way, like driving down, like, well, I think these things are meant to sound different and it's meant to make quite a big difference. And then I remember probably changing to like maybe by the third piece of glass that I changed to, even Jack was like leaning in, going, whoa, now try that one, try that one. Whoa, that one sounds massive. Whoa, that one. Then there was like a really thick black one that you gave me. And then it was massive. Like even the guitar was like rumbling my body. And it was like, even Jack was going like, flip, I don't want to swear, fucking hell, that's really making a difference, is that? And it's like, I know. And I think I walked out with two or three, and I've got a bunch now, and I need to buy some more when all the coronavirus is still
there.
We'll come and get some more of it. But yeah, it really does make a difference. And even Jack, as a lowly washboard player, can attest, it really sound different, don't they? And get different things out of the guitars, these things.
Oh, without a doubt. Again, it can be something minute, like you'd be playing like a 6mm wall thickness. Yeah. Or like that green one, which is one of the big ones, a 7mm. Yeah. Just that slight glass thickness can, if you're like an experienced player like yourself, you will hear that difference, even with just a 1mm wall thickness difference.
I was shocked, and that first time I was surprised. Like, I was actually like, I had to second guess myself for about the first, you know, first minute. I had to go back to be a different piece of glass and be like, oh no, it really does sound like different. And it's astonishing. And what's really, I mean, again, this is maybe something we can talk about with the way you run the business. What's really nice is, you know, you, I don't think there's anybody out in the world as friendly or as helpful as yourself.
Oh,
thank you. And no, but I mean it, sincerely, I mean it. And like, what's kind of nice is that, you know, you're always there to sort of help with advice. But what I found was really, really helpful is I purposefully didn't maybe order online from you, because I was like, there's quite a lot of choice around it. Mm-hmm. And it was difficult to know what to do. And because I know that loads of famous people have used your slides, I was like, oh, I don't want to bother him. I'm just a guy who needs to do my thing. So when we happened to be coming down to the town to play and we called in, what was astonishing is that you just completely, and I know you do this for anybody else, is, you know, you just receive people in and say, right, just bring your guitar in. If you're coming through, bring your guitar. I'll take some time with you. You can try stuff. There's a nice cafe next to your workshop, and you can just try different things, and you'll help people find what's right for them, won't you? And that's really... Yeah. I don't think anywhere in the world there's anything quite as special as that, where you can get completely fitted and you're allowed to try all these different things, and you will go out your way to make sure that people get the right thing for them and simplify what now I understand it. It's quite, it, you know, you've got basically two lines of products, if you like, and then there's custom stuff around that, but it's, you know, you can really help people get through it all and find the right thing. So it's, I just want to say that, just in case anybody hears this that's maybe wondering about buying one, please, you know, do go and... Yeah.
Well, I mean, to be honest with that, I'm doing with Diamond Bottlenecks, with, say, having people come in the shop, try that on, bring your guitar. Yeah. I'm just doing what back in the day when I was looking for slides, I never got any of that. It was just like a guy behind the counter gave me a blister pack with a tube in and said, there's your slide. Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
It didn't work.
No, and if you are playing an acoustic, you know, with those thicker 12, 13, 16, 15 gauge strings or whatever, like you say, you need the heft.
Yes.
And also, I think there's something about the kind of crystalline structure that just helps deal with the vibrations properly. So, mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just, so we're moving on. So, like, you know, so through the 2000s, the business is presumably growing. You're getting more stockists, you're getting more people online. So what's it like for you at this point then? So does it become like a kind of full-time thing ever, you know, despite being a house husband? Like, how do you sort of juggle the two?
Well, it's been full-time for me since 2009.
So since 2009.
2009, it's been the full-time thing. Okay. Before then, it was like split 50-50 with the house husband and the odd part-time job.
Uh-huh.
It was when the London Resonator Centre down in London around 2003-2004.
Ron and
Mel Isaacs, they became my first big stockist.
Yes.
I mean, with places like the Acoustic Centre in Wapping, they were having like, say, 10 or 12 a month. The Acoustic Centre would order 30, 40 at a time. And they could sell them all across the globe. Because they were then really the place to buy resonator guitars and slides. Mm-hmm. So it got to a point where my wife said to me, look, you either keep doing what you're doing, which is like 50% in the workshop making slides and 50% doing the part-time jobs, or you bite the bullet and do it full-time. She says, I'll back you, we'll go for it. But I knew that once I could do it full-time, that was it. I could make a success.
That's wonderful. So 2009, you start doing this. Like, how has it changed and grown the business?
What's changed a lot of it is social media.
In what way has that changed it then? So has that made you more accessible to people? Or
It's got our name. I mean, we were known before, but it's got our name around even more, because You'll see a posting on any of these Facebook or Instagram slide guitar groups.
Yeah.
And there'll always be a question. It probably comes about once every couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I need a really good glass slide. Where do I go?
Yeah.
And you'll get the odd one or two naming other people, and then you'll get a plethora of Diamond Bottlenecks customers saying, go here.
That's amazing.
And that's where a lot of it comes from. Certainly for the past 5-6 years, that's where a lot of it's come from.
And you're very active on social media, aren't you? So I know you do, I think, in a genuinely good way, like support the sort of our little part of the guitar world. Like, I think you're very good at following people, supporting people, sharing stuff, and just liking and commenting and all this stuff that just kind of in our kind of little world kind of really sort of you know tips it all along a lot. You know, I always see you liking and commenting on people's stuff and supporting.
I've been in a resonator slide player since the early 80s.
Yeah.
So this is our group, if you have to.
I mean, yeah, there's a whole bunch. And what's been really nice, I find, for, like, say, Instagram and Facebook and stuff, is that there's people all over the world that are really into this stuff. And what's really nice is how you connect. And sometimes, you know, I'll get, like, a follow, or we, the Washboard Resonator, will get a follow of somebody, and their little picture's got, like, them holding a resonator. So you click on it, and then you look at all the likes on their pictures, and it's all the same people. And you just go, how did I never even find you? But it just keeps, you know, wheels within wheels.
It is wheels within wheels.
People. And and what's, I think, great for social media, I mean, obviously it sounds like it's helped your business, but also it kind of, I think it's really good for, like, just the standard of playing. You realise, who's good and who's not, but also, like, it makes you want to try and improve or try try tunings or try techniques that you never tried before, because you just see it on Instagram. You go, that's amazing, or try a product like yours. So I think it all helps. So okay, so, like, you so it's grown because of social media, you're saying, and it's changed because of social media. So what does that mean? Is that good for your business in terms of, like, do you have sort of very awkward questions, and do you spend a lot of time every day dealing with queries from people and trying to unpick lies and myths? And is it a hard thing to deal with? Is there anything you can share now for anybody listening, to, like, any questions you don't want to be asked ever again?
we do get a lot. I'll tell you what we get a lot of. And it certainly is. Obviously, because it's such a small specialist business, we haven't got multiple thousands of shops.
No.
So what we tend to find is you've got other big companies. You'll see them all plastered all over social media, who sell glass slides, Pyrex glass slides. 9 times out of 10, they, for some reason, and to this day they still do it, they're the wrong size.
Mm-hmm.
You can get like a 17.5mm or a ring size 7.5mm slide. So if you're a little finger player like yourself, fantastic. That size fits, but it's too small. It's only something like 45mm. So it doesn't cover all 6 strings.
Mm.
If you go up to the next product, it's like, as you see, you'll see small, medium, or large.
That's it, yeah.
I'll try medium, which is longer. But that's 19.5mm, ring size 9.5. But that's too loose.
Mm.
Where do I get something that amalgamates the two, the small size with a longer length? Nobody does it apart from us.
How do you actually fix that as well, Ian? Do you have various tubes in sizing from 0.5mm difference then?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow, so you have a lot of stock in all the time then?
We've always got stock in, and if we actually haven't got the piece, because we've got an on-site glass maker who resizes the tubes, someone may say, I want a ruby red one, but I want one in 18mm, and we've got a 20mm. We'll just walk it down the shop, and they'll put it in their furnace and resize it for me.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think that's really cool.
Perfect.
I wanted to reiterate what Martin said as well about, just, like, from my experience in that shop as well, I think it's worth people going. If you can get perfect fit, as you said as well. And I thought it was really cool that you just, it's very unpretentious. It's just a little shop in this warehouse of other people who make amazing things out of glass. And you came out in your apron with, like, soot over your face or whatever, you know, and it's like, so I think it's just it's a great experience just to go to, you know. It's not a really fancy shop somewhere where you...
It's old school. It's like traditional.
Yeah.
It's a proper workshop. And Stourbridge, which is a small town, you know, just away from Birmingham there in the Midlands in England, is a glass centre in the country, isn't it? There's a couple of glass centres. Sort of around the Stoke area, where they used to make all the beer bottles back in the day. But then Stourbridge has a special kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Can you explain about Stourbridge and how you're now part of that tradition?
Yeah, well, there were two main centres for glass. One was Sunderland, mm-hmm. and the other one was Stourbridge. Stourbridge was originally the probably I mean, going back to the 1600s, I say the glass centre where we are, where we're based in Stourbridge, half of that is the original Webb Corbett Glass Company, which was formed in 1680 or something like that.
It's really
back that far, yeah. Yeah.
So you're working amongst kind of businesses that have been going, what's that, 400 years, 500
years? 400 years, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
The majority of guys who work, certainly work with me, and in the other units are from the old Stuart Crystal Glassworks, again, which is from the 1700s. But as time's gone on, and obviously cheaper imports have come in from the Far East, it's now more, instead of like having, say, 30-odd big companies employing 100, 200 people, there's now three or four dozen of them. Again, like us, a few guys just making specialist stuff.
Yeah.
That's what it tends to be. It's still there, but it's just fragmented into smaller companies.
Yeah. And more kind of, I guess, like specialist sort of bespoke.
That's right, yeah.
High-end items and stuff, which is probably, you know, the nature of like Western Western kind of industry, really, isn't it? It's more, yeah, more the way it is now, sadly. So I guess what we'll do is we'll just talk a little bit about how the workshop is set up, and then we'll talk about maybe some of the people that have used your slides and some of your experiences with that. So you are based in this glass centre, and there's all these businesses around you with their little units. So you are part of... You work out of a unit. Is it Red House?
Red House Glasscrafts.
Red House Glasscrafts. Yeah. And you are the sole proprietor of Diamond Bottlenecks. Is that right? Do you employ people?
There's three of us. There's three of us in there. Mm-hmm. Richard Lamming, who is the proprietor, he owns the shop.
Okay.
He's the top glass restorer, glass repairer, probably in the UK.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, he's been
doing it. Did not know that.
Yeah. Well, he's in his mid-60s now. He's been doing it since he was 15.
Wow.
So, yeah. So if you've got any type of glass that needs repairing or restoring, he's the guy to go for. He's the proprietor of the shop. There's Nick Gritton, who's in there, who is a master glass cutter. He does, whenever you go into, say, somewhere like Selfridges or Harrods, and you see the lead crystal goblets with all the beautiful cuts on, say from Raw Scott or someone like that, 9 times out of 10 he's cut that.
Wow.
And then there's me. Wow. And because all the machines in there are exactly what I need to do what I do, I'm the third person in there. So the other guy who works with me is a glassmaker named Ian Bamforth, who does all the resizing and makes the occasional tube for me. When we need that, as Jack was saying earlier, if you need a specific size, I'll take it down to Ian's glass shop, the Stourbridge glass blowing studio, and he will resize it in their furnace for me. So he is basically part of it, although he's got his own little company.
So you kind of outsource him almost when you need him and things like that. So what's the process then from start to finish, say, of getting one of these lead crystal slides? Like, how does, because you were telling me once about how you have to pick up some of the tubes are blown off site.
That's right. Yeah.
So just tell us how, you know, sort of how one gets one of these, like what is the process like? Because they come on, and how long are the tubes that they blow these tubes?
They're about 2.5-3 foot long, something when they get to us.
So they're blown. So yeah, how does that do? How does that work then? How does that?
Well, what it is, the ones you've got there are lead crystal.
Yeah.
Now, lead crystal, not a lot of glassmakers from about the past 10 years have used lead crystal now. They use non-leaded. So there's two main suppliers of the glass tubes. There's a guy, Steve Bradley, called Bradley Crystal, down in Barnstaple in Devon. He specialises in lead crystal. And the other one who makes the ones that you've got there, uh-huh, Steve mainly does the custom stuff, which is Lumsdale Glass in Lumsdale in Derbyshire, Anthony Russell uh-huh Glass, or Lumsdale Glass as they're called now. They're the guys that make the long tubes for me. And then they blow the tubes, say, specifically lead crystal, 24% lead to glass percentage. And then either I'm I meet up with the glassmakers between the two places, or have a day out, have a day trip out, and go and pick them up myself.
Oh, very nice. Well, Derbyshire's beautiful, isn't it? It's very, very nice. Very, very nice part of the world.
Right, so under the Derbyshire Dales.
So you go and get your tubes. So presumably then you wrap them up in, you know, cotton wool in the back of your car. You drive bubble them wrap. Back. You bubble wrap. You're very careful over speed bumps, I imagine, in the potholes. And then you get them back. And then is it literally a case of just chopping them down into like various standard lengths then polishing the ends? Is it that simple?
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned earlier, each tube, from one tube, you will get sections and you can actually see through the tube. So you can basically think, well, that's wider than that section. So you can take one section off, which you pretty much certain is about, say, 20, 21 millimetres for big fingers. And then as you look through the tube, you'll see that it actually, the inside will narrow. The wall will get thicker. So you can actually cut that bit and measure it. And you've probably got 18 mil, 17 mil.
Yeah.
So this is basically just looking at the tube and working out which section will give you the piece you need.
Is that just part of the...
We cut them on the saw blades and then shape and polish them on all the machinery.
Is that just part of the manufacturing of the tubes that the thickness changes?
So you tend to find that the larger internal diameter, because every tube, the outside diameter of every tube is pretty much the same. So the wider internal diameter will have the thinner wall, a 4 mil, 5 mil thick wall. As you go down to the size that you use, which is 17 mil, you'll find that you'll probably have a 6 or 7 mil thick wall, because although the outside is the same, the internal has got down, has narrowed.
Well, one of the astonishing things last time I was there is I have very kind of skinny fingers. And so for me, sometimes even some of your like slides that have a very tight, maybe even like 16 mil inner, which is quite tight, on a hot, sweaty day, I can be playing, getting a bit excited, and they can still kind of like start moving or pinging off a little bit if it's like a hot day. You did me one last time you were there. There was this whole long tube there, and I was explaining this, and you said, look at this piece of tube here. I can see that it's kind of conical on the inside. It's wider at one end and thinner at the other. And you said that, I think if we chop that down, that's going to be really snug. And I've never had a slide as perfect like this. This one I'm holding this transparent one with the gold flexing now. It's probably about 16 at one end and about 14, maybe even 30 at the other end. And it stays on without it, but it's really easy to get on and off. But because it's thinner at the thin end of the finger, it won't ping off. It's perfect. And you chop that right out of like the middle of a piece for me, which is... while awaited. Me and Jack went and had breakfast or something at the cafe while you were doing it, but it was amazing and just credible that you can even do that with this natural product, you know. So okay, so that's how the things are made, and then there's standard stuff off the line that have a ring size, aren't they? And then you can also do the custom thing if people can see it. So let's just talk now about, as we wrap this up, let's just talk a little bit about some of the people. So you start off saying that, you know, you listen to these players back in the day when you were getting into this stuff. Have you had any players that you were listening to and whose records you've owned that you've ended up dealing with and have been customers of yours? And if so, like, what's that like to actually be part of the process of people that are maybe heroes and people you like?
The one that stands out for me is Mark Knopfler.
Yeah, that's a big, that's kind that's of, that's, prob- that's probably why I never originally ordered one online and bothered you about custom, because I was scared. Because if he's making stuff for Mark Knopfler, Ian will be sitting on a throne with a crown on right now, made out of bottlenecks. But that is a big deal, isn't it?
Well, bizarrely, we didn't even know. We just got a call one December morning from his guitar tech to say he just broke his favourite slide. Can we get one shipped over to Des Moines in Iowa as soon as possible? I'm saying, well, probably not now. Does he use our slides? And this guy, his guitar tech, said he's used them for 8 years. Nobody ever told me.
Wow. So how does that even work then? Is it just simply the case that maybe his guitar tech went into one of these places in London, or he went in himself and chose some?
That's exactly what it was. So Glenn, his guitar tech, went into a shop and saw these slides, bought a couple, realised that they'd actually fit Mark Knopfler, took them into his studio, and he tried it on and said, that's the best thing I've ever used. I need more.
He's right. Okay, so you had no idea about that all those years.
I had no clue.
Isn't that amazing?
The first thing we know is when his guitar tech said, I've just broke his favourite slide. I'm in trouble, help.
that's sort of nice. So that's amazing, is it? So you must have been buying Dire Straits albums, and then next thing you know, he's got your bits of glass on his finger. That's amazing.
Well, I did say to his guitar tech, I said, well, how come I've never heard him play lots of slide before? And his guitar tech said, well, he does play slide, but he plays more now because he's using yours.
Wow, I mean, that's amazing. So since then, have you had any kind of actual contact with somebody like that? Any emails or any kind of thank yous or anything like that? Or is it just the way those worlds work?
Well, we did some special ones for him, which we sent down. But normally, when you're talking global megastars, you talk to their people. Their people.
Yeah, of course you do. Their people. This is something I'm finding the more and more I speak to kind of, resonated people is that you hear all these stories about these big stars, but it's that there are I don't know what you call them, handlers, roadies that kind of handle a lot of that kind of
stuff.
But it's just amazing to think that even somebody like that, I mean, just a great player, a great songwriter, ridiculously a guitar genius, and like I say, somebody you must have loved, you know, is using your stuff. He lived in Leeds for a while as well, which is where we're based. So it's like, you know, resonating land of peer, you know. But we play in the Grove sometimes where he used to play and stuff. So it's nice to know, you know, that's all going on. So yeah, what about other people then? Because I've seen, even the other day, I was on your website because we were talking about something the other day. I went on your website and I saw Derek Trucks using one of your slides, which I didn't even know was a thing.
Yes, that's right. That was one of my customers. He went to see Derek Trucks play.
Yeah.
But Derek Trucks isn't really renowned for using a resonator.
No, he uses one of the medicine bottles, doesn't he, and plays electric.
On the electric, yeah.
Yeah, and then, I just saw him, I was like, oh my goodness, I had no idea. Yeah.
And this guy just said he took his resonator, his Dobro, to a Derek Trucks gig. Derek Trucks came outside just to have a noodle on it, and he said, try this, and it was one of our bottleneck slides.
Isn't that fantastic?
He sent me the film, he said, would you like this?
That's it. And then so there's other people like in the resonator world, there are certain names that go around that are like the big kind of names in resonator playing. So there's, you know, like they have signature slides with you. So are there any of those names you want to talk about and stuff and what it's like?
Well, I suppose, I mean, obviously there's yourself. There's Michael Messer.
Michael Messer's got one, hasn't he? And then, Mike Dowling, I adore his playing.
Mike Dowling, he uses the Matus bottlenecks.
Yeah, Doug McLeod.
Yeah, he's got his own signature model here. That's.
Catfish Keith, like when I was getting to resonators, I really got into a lot of Catfish Keith stuff. I think he's got an incredible, like, right hand and feel and timing. Oh, he's just an incredible musician. He's got like signature slides, but he also, like, because he deals in nationals, doesn't he? He was telling me he buys quite a lot of stuff off you. Is that right?
He takes two. He's got one which is called the signature slide, which has got his name engraved, because we can engrave these slides. So he's got his name engraved down the side, which is what they call the double cut with the lip gone.
Yeah.
Or he does the cheaper one, which is the normal one with the lip still intact.
Yeah.
And he sells those off his website, and obviously merchandise tables as well. He takes them to well, whenever we get to do gigs again,
he'll
put one of his merch tables.
So that's nice. I didn't know that. So even Catfish Keith, when he's going around gigging, he's got a merch table and he's flogging regular bottleneck. Jack, there we go.
Okay, a Martin Roper model.
There you go. Martin, I can see the, Martin Roper.
Well, they won't fit anywhere. He's with midget hands, but yeah.
The last thing I want is a bottleneck slide with my name on. I mean, I think if that happens to me, I think I'd be, I don't know, I think it's time to hide it. I mean, I'd have Yorkshire Lad on it or Specky Four Eyes or something. That'd be fine.
Well, we did one for a good friend of mine called Chris Martin, who was up in, he lives in Heddon in Leeds.
Ironically, that's his old guitar just over my shoulder there.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he's got a model which is called the Yorkshire Special.
He's already done it.
And he's got engraved on the side of it is how much?
How much?
Yes.
That's I think Jack has a lot of ribs me a lot about.
Well, I won't say the barber story from just 2 days ago.
My Yorkshireness and spending money and how much, you know. Do we really need to spend that on this? Like even now making these podcasts, like we have to buy a special Zoom package. And I was like, do we really have to do that? Do we really have to pay for Zoom to talk to people? Is that where we're at? And Jack's like, yes, we do. You cheapskate. Right, there we go. So, I mean, that's just incredible. I mean, just incredible story. I there's so much that you've told us today that I didn't know about what you do. I just thought you made really great bottleneck slides, but actually what we've got here is like an incredible story about falling into it.
Yeah,
and then running with it once you've got it, and really making a world-class product. So that's just what a fantastic life, and what a fantastic kind of business that is. Like, you must be really proud of like what you've achieved. Do you ever look back and think, how did that happen? Like, this is odd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like a lot, as I said earlier, you get the big conglomerate slide companies that do three sizes, and they just send them out. But even now, after doing them all these years, I mean, decades, to be honest, and even now, I'll do one slide and I'll pick it up and look at it and I'll think, nice one, you did well. And that is still, to this day, that's what keeps me going. When I pack it up and take it to the post office, I'm thinking, that's a nice slide, he'll enjoy that.
Oh, that's really nice. So it sounds like you're still genuinely happy to sort of like help musicians and make their playing situation and also make something that you're proud of, that you know is good quality and it's helping. And it's fantastic in these days, as we were talking about earlier, that it's fantastic that in these days of like lots of Far East production and people trying to the big companies trying to make the maximum profits and sell their products, that here you are in Britain, the British craftsman, making a handmade product, at the highest quality, that actually if you look at the prices are still, I think, incredibly good value. I pay for these when I go, it's fantastic. And I think it's amazing that you could find that niche and still keep a great business going in Britain. You could probably even farm this out and probably make bigger profits, but you wouldn't want to do that, I guess.
No,
this make it yourself and know it's right.
Back in the early days, so when I was involved with Brett, who literally kicked Diamond Bottlenecks off with me in the workshop, and he said, there's two things you want to do. He said, one, always keep it controllable. Always stay controllable. Business. Don't promise 1,000 when you know you can't make 1,000. So then the other thing linked to that, he said, don't be the person to make the best, to make the most. Be the person who makes the best.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me for 20 years.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Solid. Don't make the most, make the best.
Yeah. And that's beautiful. Well, Ian, I think, I don't know, we've covered it all. That's, that's amazing. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
What we do, we've just got some questions that we ask everybody just to sort of put them on the spot. So we'll ask you those questions, then we'll say goodbye. So question number one is, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self?
What advice would I give my younger self? I can't think of anything like that.
Well, you're obviously perfect then, aren't you?
That's embarrassing now.
I think you should have started the business earlier, then you would have been,
As Michael Messer said to me for all these years I've known him, he said, you were just doing the right thing in the right place at the right time.
I mean, literally,
that's what it was.
You had that conversation with Brosman, where just the right guy was stood next to you. And it's like, it just shows, doesn't it, in many ways, that like, it's like, you've just got to do stuff. And the more you do stuff, I guess, like those chances, that go up. There's a question here, which is not an odd question for you. It's meant to be, we speak to a lot of musicians generally, but this is, how would you explain what you do to a 5-year-old?
To a 5-year-old, I'd just say, if you're passionate about something, say you're passionate about wanting to learn slide guitar. if you can, just get the best you can get.
Yes.
And if it means waiting a few years until you've got the money to buy it, you know where it is and you can buy it, buy the best.
Yes.
I've always said to a lot of slide players, there would be a lot more slide players in the world if guitar shops sold decent slides. Because even back in the day with me, you would go to a guitar shop, say, I need a slide, and you'd be passed a blister pack with something that's way too big, way too long, doesn't sound right. And you'd think, well, I'm not very good at this. Mm. You probably are good at it. You've just got the wrong gear.
I agree. I've got my, I'm going off on that, but I've got my metal one that I bought in a shop in Huddersfield in about 96, 97. I think it might have even been like a Dunlop branded one, but I was trying to play on my acoustics with this and I just couldn't make it work. I didn't know. So this went away for years and then it came out, you know, in my mid 20s. And then my slide playing didn't really start working properly until I got this green one. This thick walled thing, you can do stuff with these heavyweight green ones. You use like less moving and you can do things you couldn't normally do. And the tone is massive and sustain is massive on an acoustic instrument. And it's like, you know, now we all know, but do stuff you couldn't do with your product, which is amazing.
That's right. Well, as I said, Dom and Bottlenex is pretty much solely geared towards resonator and acoustic players, simply because with electric guitars and electric gear, you can use pretty much anything because you can put in a compressor pedal, an overdrive pedal, any kind of pedal into the line, go into your Marshall amplifier and jack it up to 10.
Yeah.
You could use a big pen for a slide. It would work. It resonators, doesn't. You've got your fingers, your strings, and a slide, and that's it.
It's an acoustic thing, and the thick strings, and to make the strings work, it's really important. So, like, there's a couple more questions. What this question is? I can't wait to get an answer for this one. Who would play you in the film of your life? Now, come on, now, let's see what you're all about.
I could have said Mr. Bean, but that's
Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean.
Yeah, I'll probably say Mr. Bean.
Do you drive a Mini?
Sorry?
I said, do you drive a Mini?
I did many years ago.
Jack does.
Everyone.
I don't know if Bruce Willis or somebody like that. I don't know. It's
probably something like that with not much hair.
No, just a strong character. The last one is how do you like your tea?
I can easily admit to that. I haven't drunk tea in 25 years. I'm a coffee man.
There we go. This is fascinating, fascinating answers to this question when we speak to other people. So there we go. Wonderful. Well, look, I think we've covered it all there. And I just think it's been amazing. So thank you again for sharing your life and your way into this. And thank you for making the world of resonator guitar playing better single-handedly. Thank you. Well, I mean, genuinely, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. You've helped me. You've taken us in. You've helped us. You've helped what we do. And I really appreciate it. And I've spoken to loads of other players over the last, you know, couple of years that use your products and feel the same. So thank you for everything.
So if anybody wants to see anything more, just go onto our Diamond Bottlenecks website. It's all on there.
It's there.
The glass, the product range, everything.
Excellent. Yeah. So thank you so much for taking the time. And
it's
really
my pleasure.
Appreciate
thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ian. Take care.
Cheers, Jack. Take care. Bye, Martin.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Washboard Resonators Present.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a comment.
And to support our band, please sign up to the mailing list. You'll find the link in the show notes and on the website.